This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Giddy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Say the life we lead ain't good enough. Our load is heavy and our hands are rough. Possession is a funny thing indeed. Get what you want and never what you need. That might be true enough for all the rest, but you and me, babe, you know we've had the best. But I may not get to where these songs I do ever break through, but I will get to.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you worldwide in beautiful high-definition audio or something quite like it. To fans worldwide, wherever they may roam, however far they may travel, all of us, you people out there, fans of Phil Pritchett and the full band and Texas music, crave and desire knowledge and enlightenment. That is why you tune into this program. Bless you all. Phil here with you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. How you doing, folks? Thrilled to be with you this week. Delighted, as always. Sitting here in the cozy confines of Trinidad, I look around the walls, the guitars hanging on the walls, beckoning play, beckoning ideas, letting creativity flow effortlessly, as we love to do here in the studio. Thanks for joining us here, folks. What a week. What a show we have for you this week. Oh, we are shaking it up. You know, occasionally on the podcast, we just get these things kind of happen. Someone's going to be in town. Got to get somebody on the show. Man, oh man. Two sold-out nights at Billy Bob's, Texas. Who is it, Phil? You say, it might surprise you. Willie Nelson? Pat Green, maybe? George Strait? Who can sell out Billy Bob's two nights in a row? Miranda Lambert's band is in town. She has sold it out two nights in a row. That means that Jordan Powell, the podcast's own Jordan Powell, my old road manager, is in town. He'll be dropping by, and hopefully he'll be bringing along my old booking agent, my old road manager slash manager, the great Troy Johnson, who has been all over the Texas music scene and elsewhere. He is now in the Miranda Lambert camp as well. They'll be dropping by here for our second segment to talk about the Grammys, man. You know, backstage at the Grammys. We were talking about that last week. Oh, man, Dylan was there. Mumford & Sons, Avett Brothers, Gaga and Rihanna. Yeah, Joe, I'm talking to you down there in Houston, the Rihanna fan who listens to this podcast. Bless you, sir. Bless you, sir. We're working on you. We're working on you. But no, Jordan Powell's getting some texts from Jordan while he was at the Grammys, and from Troy Johnson as well. So we'll catch up with all things Grammys with those guys coming by the studio here in the middle segment. So look forward to that. Well, 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 what a week it has been. We played the White Elephant Saloon. Full band. First time the full band has played the White Elephant Saloon. You know the White Elephant Saloon. Here in the Stockyards, Fort Worth, Texas. Legendary venue. A venue Kurt South has been telling me to play. Remember Kurt South? The podcast's own Kurt South. He's up there in Virginia. How you doing, South? He's been telling me for years, dude, you'll kill at the Elephant. You'll kill at the Elephant. Go play the Elephant. And I've always been like, I don't know, man. It's kind of country. It's kind of this. It's kind of that. Garbage, he would always say. Garbage. And sure enough, man, we had a big night there. More than a little special thanks goes out to the good weather we had here in Fort Worth that night. Miranda Lambert, they were in town Saturday playing at Billy Bob's. She had a sold-out show, so a lot of people down there. A lot happening. And, man, we packed it in there. A record night, I was told. An attendance record night at the White Elephant. Man, it was just stuffed in there. Great, great times. Thanks for coming out, all you folks here in Fort Worth as well, and those of you traveling to the show. Thrilled. Thanks for coming in, everybody. Very busy at the studio here, man. Been mixing the new Seth Jones record. Seth, eclectic songwriter from right up here in North Texas, writes very bizarre, very creative-minded tunes, lyrically driven. And, man, he lets me – he's not so much a country dude. So, Seth, man, I'm putting all kinds of, effects, little synthy things on there, atmospheric things in his work. So real excited about that. Been working on that. Also working on the new Brian Joyner project. Fellows from up north of here near Plano. Been in here in the studio recording. Brian, listen up. It's coming great, man. I'll be emailing you those mixes. That's what happens when you record here at the studio. We record, man. We just record. We don't sit around and watch me dial in kick drums and stuff. You come to Trinidad, you record. Then I mix it down, man. Email you some tracks. Hey, tell me where we are. Getting some feedback from people on that. So I've been mixing a lot. We've got our good friend Jeff King from the Notorious Gringos fame. North Carolina band. Jeff now lives in Oklahoma. He'll be in here doing songs this weekend with me and Stuart Wiley backing him up. So come record here at Trinidad yourself. What are you waiting for? Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. It's what I do. Or call me, 817-733-5256. Well, and what's more, you know what else I did last week? I went back to my old high school, Highland Park High School in Dallas. I'm a Parky, the mean streets of HP, I tell everyone. Well, I go back for this literary festival. They have it every year. It's really, really well done. It's a, a creativity workshop, would you say? Where I guess during the students' English classes, they go to certain workshops and they'll have like 20 or 30 all creative types in there, you know, songwriters, poets, people who've published books and things, all of much repute. I'm always very honored to be asked. The first time I did it was maybe like 2000, 2001. I went in there and you just talked about songwriting, talked about my business, and the kids all asked me questions and things like that. Very, very, very fun. Great time there at Highland Park High School. So I've been back a couple of other times. So I got to go this year. I hadn't been in a few years. Had a great time there. You know, I try to learn a lot from those kids. You know, we're always talking on this show about, you know, changing attitudes and music. You know, how did the younger generation, how do they view music? Is it essential? I kept using the example while I was talking to them. Like, you know, when Michael Jackson came to Texas Stadium, 1984 or 1985, right in there. Played the victory tour there at the now deceased Texas Stadium. Rest in peace. Michael Jackson, you had Van Halen playing Reunion Arena in Dallas the night before. And Eddie Van Halen got in town a night early or whatever, or stayed a night later. It was on consecutive nights. And Eddie went to the Michael Jackson show and got up and played Beat It, you know, on the guitar. That's him playing the solo on there. That cool solo, in case you didn't know. But anyway, gosh, you go to the next school the next day. If you don't have on your Van Halen t-shirt, you don't have on your Michael Jackson t-shirt, you're done. You missed it. That's it. It's over. You know, you can't go to YouTube and go, I went to YouTube and checked it out. Then I just went to the website after the show and ordered the shirt off the band's website. Of course, you couldn't do that back then. You had to go to the show, the urgency to go to the show. So I got some feedback from the kids. I said, man, is it urgent for you young people to go to concerts? Is that what y'all do? And they raised their hands. You know, some of them have been to see Kings of Leon and you know, Lady Gaga and stuff like that. You know, like some big shows. But they all kind of admitted, really, like, oh, we go to maybe one show a year, maybe. If that many, a couple of people are like, oh, I probably went to two concerts a year last year. Gosh, I remember in high school just going to, like, Starplex, or whatever it's called out there, the Shed out there in Fair Park. I mean, it's just every week, you know, you had like Sting, and then you had Dylan the next week, you had Elton John the next week, Clapton the next week. Gosh, who else did we see there? Guns N' Roses. I don't know. I mean, they just had a huge concert. It was like 10 or $12 to go sit on the lawn on the grass in the back, you know, amphitheater. And we just went to concerts all the time. It was maybe $8 to part. It just wasn't a big undertaking. So we talked about those changes and everything in the music business. I learned a lot from those kids. So if you're listening out there, Highland Park High School, thanks for giving me your feedback on everything. Good times indeed. I was struck by another thought I'll share with you here very briefly. You know what, folks? Music today, we can learn a lot, us musicians and producers, from the Food Network. What are you talking about, Phil? What are you talking about? You can learn a lot from the Food Network. Let me tell you what I mean. So often happens, I hear musicians, especially young guys, say it all the time. If I'm doing a mix, because I'll do some weird stuff in the mixes sometimes and say, hey, man, check this out. Or you often are confronted with someone who's concerned that any weirdness, any creativity, any odd song they may have written won't pass the mustard and it'll get passed over when trying to go for radio play, especially in the Texas music genre market, etc., whatever that means. And rightly so. They're like, man, I don't know if we need horns on there. It's going to freak everybody out, or a synth sound, or a weird Wurlitzer. Man, I don't know. I don't want to freak anyone out. And they say, man, I want to write a song that's just right down the middle. It's just about floating down the river in Texas, or whatever, Drake and Shiner. And, you know, and that's all well and good. But I was trying to make the point talking to these kids. I kind of worked this into my sermon, my lecture there I was working on. I said, man, but the bands that really broke through, the bands that mattered, the Pink Floyds or whoever way back in the old day, they went into the studios wanting to blow your mind, wanting to blow up their own catalog music today. They wanted something to come on when the needle dropped on that record to really blow your mind, give you something that you hadn't thought about, that you didn't expect. That was the sole goal of music, really, was to always be opening doors and not just be going, hey, man, you know, Pink Floyd didn't go in there to make the wall and say, hey, you know, let's sound like the old record. That one sold pretty good, or whatever. Let's sound like this song that's on the radio right now, you know, then we'll be on the radio too. That was stupid thinking. You wanted to do something different. You wanted to stay a step ahead and not a step behind what was going on. So to illustrate my point, I turned to the Food Network. I told the kids, and this is true, I was watching the Food Network maybe the night before I went to do this lecture. And there was this chef on there. It was in Chicago. And it was a black building, like an old brownstone kind of thing. Painted black, no windows, no sign, no lights, totally nondescript. And they said, man, only people in the know what is behind this facade. You go in there, there's a genius chef in there, I forget his name, and he has like a laboratory in there. He's got a still, he's got beakers, he's got stuff bubbling, gases and everything. And he is doing things with food that no human being has ever thought to do before. You think, so what, Phil? Man, it was unbelievable. He takes the nitrous oxide, the liquid nitrogen you spray on a rose, then you can shatter the rose on a table. Well, he's doing this. He's shooting food with this stuff. Like, you know, a vegetable soup. He blasts it, and this soup turns into like this frozen kind of ice cream thing, and he builds this sculpture out of soup, out of frozen soup, and puts like a little caviar on top and a slice of lemon. Then he shoots like a bow and arrow, shoots an arrow through it with a bow and serves it. That's a meal. And it was just like the most bizarre, creative thing. And man, let me tell you what, you can't get into this guy's restaurant. 6 month waiting list, 6 month, wait a second, $500 a head. You want to eat in this guy's restaurant? $500 and a 6 month wait. And you know what? You get a 25 course meal when you get there, a 25 course meal. Some of the courses are like one bite. It's like a test tube with, pureed raspberries, wheatgrass, and like some shredded beef tenderloin, and you kind of suck it down like a shot you get at some cheap bar, you know, that kind of thing. He had a piece of frozen olive oil on the end of like a nail with like an edible flower hanging off the wall, that as you're walking down the hall, you just turn your head and you just sort of, with your mouth, you just pluck this frozen little brick of olive oil, nitrous frozen olive oil. Anyway, the moral of the story is this guy is just no boundaries, man. No boundaries. He didn't go in there and say, hey, people like steak, right? Steak and potatoes, you can't go wrong. That's what people like. I want to serve what people like. So I'll make steak and potatoes and hope everybody lines up and pays me $500 a head and have a 6 month wait. Garbage. Garbage. That's not going to work. You got to reinvent the wheel a little bit. You think, well, I know what food is. You know, we all eat it every day. We need it. Everyone understands what food is. But it's all in the presentation, isn't it? Some cynical people say, man, there's only, you know, six strings on a guitar. There's only 12 notes, Phil. I mean, you know, it's all been done. It's all been done. BS. Get in there and represent it. Represent it. It's all in the presentation. We all know what food is. We know what music is. But show it to me in a different way. That's what inspired me watching that food show. Oh, and it should inspire you as well. All you musicians out there, blow it up, man. Blow it up. Show us all something. We're all waiting for you. And man, to top it all off, at this 25-course meal, $500 a head, dessert. The host sits down at this big table. And he says, now for dessert. What does the guy bring out? A slice of cheesecake? Ha ha! Ice cream and, you know, cake and ice cream? Come on. Banana pudding? No way. He comes in, he rolls out a canvas, a rubber mat, a huge canvas. And the guy's just sitting there with a spoon just going, what is happening? And here comes the chef. He's got this palette in his arm. He takes out this white goo. It's like steamed coconut extract or something. And he starts painting it, like literally painting, like Picasso. Like Van Gogh, just making like painting with a knife and stuff like that. Jackson Pollock, like dripping chocolate mousse. And he paints like this, literally a painting out of like food, chocolate mousse and syrup and pureed strawberries and coconut cream. And he paints a sunset and this real abstract thing. And the narrator's like, the artist, he has now become an artist. The cook has now become a painter. You know, and it's all very pretentious and very kind of funny in a way. But I tell you what, it's very inspiring. I'm like, you know, you're paying $500. You know, you don't want a bowl of ice cream, even though you don't like ice cream. Of course I like ice cream. I just want it. Just show me something. Show me something. And that's what this guy was doing, man, for $500 a head in Chicago. We as musicians should all aspire to do the same. So chew on that thought for a week. Come up with an idea, then call me when you're ready and say, Phil, let's make a record. We're blowing it up. We're blowing it up. The revolution starts now. 817-733-5256. I'm waiting for you, man. I'm on board. Well, 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 I hear him out in the hall. The familiar voices of my old road managers, Jordan Powell and Troy Johnson, both working for the Grammy-nominated, multi-platinum selling Miranda Lambert, who is in town for two sold-out nights at Billy Bob's. They're going to come in here and give us a little inside scoop on what was going on backstage at the Grammys. Here they come, Troy and Jordan, coming up next. Oh, man, all this talk about food is making me hungry. You know what I do when I get hungry? I'll tell you what I do. I go to Hot Damn Tamales right here in Fort Worth. But you, wherever you live in the world, can enjoy the greatness of Hot Damn Tamales as well by going to HotDamnTamales.com and ordering your tamales from their great-looking website, HotDamnTamales.com. Look at all the great pictures they have, all the different ideas. You want to see something, the tamale reinvented, creativity and freshness? Just check out HotDamnTamales.com. Gourmet tamales, not made with lard or other substitutes and all kinds of preservatives. I'm talking fresh stuff. I'm talking beef tenderloin, jalapeno, and beer tamales. Black bean Oaxaca cheese tamales. Three cheese tamales. Mushroom and Texas goat cheese tamales. Greatness served to your door in a frozen customized box. You will not be sorry. Tell them Phil sent you. HotDamnTamales.com.
Sky, the heavens opened up without a sound. And though they are distant, they start at the ground.
Fans, Romans, that's countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in beautiful high definition audio. Or something quite like it from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. How are you doing, fans out there? Welcome, welcome, delighted. Well, this is just big news here. Big, boy, what an event we have here, because joining us today are two known commodities in the music market today. But where did they start, really and truthfully start, with Phil Pritchard and the full band? I'm talking about the podcast's own Jordan Powell.
Thank you. Thank you. Repeat.
And making his debut on the podcast, my first true booking agent, my first true manager. He's been since then with who? Eli Young, Miranda.
Keep going.
Roger Kreger. Jack Ingram.
Keep going.
Who else? Who am I leaving out?
Chris Young.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Little Sawyer Brown stints. Some Nashville stuff.
He's been through everyone. I'm talking about the great Troy Johnson. Yeah, is here.
Thank you very much.
Troy Johnson. Right.
Thank you.
They're both in town with the Miranda Lambert Brigade that has descended on Fort Worth here for two nights, two sold out nights at Billy Bob's Texas. Yep. Is that right, pal?
That is correct.
Man, first time exciting. It's never happened in 30 years.
In 30 years of Billy Bob's, someone sold it out twice in a row.
Yep.
Now, we were talking about that in the car. Isn't that correct? Because everybody's like, man, you know, Willie sold it out. Pat Green sold it out. Ragweed sold it out. How many sold? 6,000-ish?
5,700.
Okay.
So
two nights in a row, man, for Miranda.
Yep.
Golly. You know what's funny about Miranda, and I'm in the dark. I'm not in the loop when it comes to Nashville stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I feel like, and maybe give me some perspective, pal. Given the kind of numbers she does that I see, both in tickets and album sales, and I know she's on the Grammys and stuff, I still feel like she's a little underrated. I see her a lot, but then I see the real numbers. I'm like, dude.
Well, you know, that
is that true? I'm kind of like, man, I feel like she should just be, and she is a household name, but not what the numbers would suggest. That's my perspective.
Tell me I'm wrong. That actually leads into a wonderful story. I'm glad you asked that, Phil. We
didn't even plan that.
No, not at all.
That was a great segue.
You know,
unplanned.
The first, I've been with Miranda, it'll be 6 years in May.
Yes.
The first 4 years, man, we didn't get radio play, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first record, Kerosene, was the, you know, the biggest single. Record went platinum. The song went to number 11.
Okay, right.
You know, put out two, three more singles off of that, mid-20s, you know, low 30s.
Yeah.
That's it. Next record came out, same kind of deal. Had, I think, one top 10. I think one song went to number 10. But for the first 4 years, we were just out there playing shows and really couldn't get played on the radio.
Yeah.
So it's funny. You go and you watch the Running Down a Dream, the Petty documentary, and it's just like, man, they put out, you know, the first couple records. They're just out there rocking, playing along.
Right.
But not really getting radio play.
Yeah.
They'll show up here and have 80 people show up here and have, you know, 2,000 people. But,
sure,
man, it just... Until something catches, which it has in the last 12 months.
Right.
Man, you're just flying under the radar.
It was
quietly.
A little bit, but man, she was selling a million mm-hmm. albums. I mean, that's just
all three.
And I felt like I'm just always bombarded by these new acts, and I kind of look them up, and you read something like these blogs I read, like, oh, I don't, you know, that guy only sold 100,000 records. I'm
right.
Like, then how come I'm seeing him everywhere?
Yeah. You know,
like it's a big deal. I go, Miranda, I mean, I see her, and there's no question, but I'm like, dude, she said, I mean, it is rare for someone to consistently sell a million records per release today. And I feel like, I'm like, you just don't hear about her as much as some acts that don't do nearly as well.
Man, you look
That's my perspective.
You know, you look at an act like Brooks and Dunn or somebody that you go, man, they've been touring for 20 years. They're huge. They go out and, you know, play these arenas. And you look up on album sales and you go, God, man, they sold 380,000 copies of their last record.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, you know? That's right. That's a good example.
So,
well, man, she's certainly starting to break through. You were up at the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
When was that? Last week.
Last week.
Yeah. Yep. Come on, give me something else. Who would you get your picture taken with, Dylan or anything?
Man, to be honest, you couldn't have picture cameras out.
So you were there, Johnson.
Yeah. You couldn't have your phones out. Our keyboard player, Chris Klein.
Yeah.
We were sitting there during rehearsals,
uh-huh.
and so we got to watch the whole show from start to finish before the show actually
Where
went
they
on.
Do the Grand? Madison
Staples
Center. Staples Center. Oh, yeah. It's L.A. Yeah.
So he's has his phone out, and he's just taking pictures of Eminem during his show, his rehearsal. And a security guy
Some
walks
gangster
by.
Guy come clobbering
Yeah, oh, they
head.
All have little microphones. Oh, yeah, walking yeah. So he walks up to him, he's like, I'm going to need to see your phone. And he's like, oh, I'll just delete the picture. He's like, no, I want to see your phone. You know, and he's like, delete that one.
Wow.
But you would see these guys walking around the crowd, just like little headpieces on, looking for people. Anytime your phone barely went up towards the stage, I mean, they were on you and having you, delete all your photos.
Oh, man. Well, So, yeah, dude, high security at the Grammys.
Very high.
No messing around.
No, but, you know, I mean, it was really cool. You can definitely tell the difference in the artists who are into the scene
yeah.
versus the ones who are appreciative and glad to be there. And, you know, you'll see them hanging out in the hallway, and then you'll see somebody go by with, like, seven security guys, and, you know, they're just pushed right past you, and, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, man, if you know, Billy Joel can stand over here in the hallway and say, hey, and, you know, hang out with everybody.
Yeah, why can't
– Yeah. I mean, who are you kidding?
But so, man, how is it a lot of – is there a lot of camaraderie backstage, or is nobody kind of – I mean, is it a big party, or is everybody just kind of doing their own deal, got their own people moving around?
You know, it's kind of hit or miss. You'll find some that, you know – we'll just kind of hang out, literally stand in the hallway, watch everybody that walks
by. That's the place to be is the hallway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's going to the stage for this and that.
Yeah.
So who'd you get closest to out there, Johnson?
Dylan.
Bob Dylan.
Dylan and...
Did you reach out and just go, you're awesome,
no,
man?
I happened to be standing by the side of the stage right as their rehearsal was done. It was Mumford Sons, which was amazing, by the way.
That was
amazing.
The best part. We talked about that last week. I mean, that was the only thing I really saw that was like, man, that was great.
Yeah. And Dylan, he looks younger than he is.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like a... How old is...
God, almost, he's gotta be almost 70. 70, yeah.
He,
68.
He just looks like a rugged 48-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I don't know. You know, he's just kind of...
Isn't he like 5'4", 100 pounds?
Hoodie, black hoodie.
Yeah.
You know, you always hear about that stuff. And yeah, he walked off and it was Bieber...
Yeah.
And Dylan, which is kind of weird anyway.
Right.
You know, just having those two. And I'm just standing there, and they just walk past me, and they're gone. They don't hang out. They don't talk to anyone. They just – but it was just – I of course, tweeted. I was like, I can't explain.
Technologically savvy Troy Johnson.
I can't explain to you how cool this is.
Yeah.
But Bob Dylan just walked by me. That's how cool it is.
Now, why were you there? That's my next question. Working? Are you studying under the great Jordan Powell? Selling merch in the lobby?
I am the backstage manager.
Backstage manager. Okay, yeah, I didn't know there was an official title.
There's an official title.
How long have you been in the organization?
The self-dubbed backstage manager.
Johnson always quick to give himself a title.
He's one of those guys. Maybe you got to have a title.
Behind the scenes. That's
do you remember?
Oh,
hey,
what is
remember,
my role?
You remember Cordell Stewart, the
of
great
Steeler, great. Yeah.
Okay. They called him the Slash.
Right.
Come in, he'd play quarterback. Then he'd be
receiver,
running
back,
running kicks.
Yeah.
Johnson is the Slash.
Troy Johnson. If you need something done, you got Troy Johnson.
Well, and you know what, man? As our organization grew, especially in the last year, we started playing, you know, big arena shows. My time was spent more in the office handling tour accounting and travel stuff and everything else. And it's just hard to, you know, run around and get all the X Factor stuff done.
Yeah.
And man, we, you know, we got some VIPs here. We got to get them from here to here, and I got to have some time with Miranda. And
you got to delegate some.
Right.
Some,
and you know, when you get
duties,
to that point,
know.
There's very few people that you bring in that you trust. And man, you know, Johnson and I have gone back 13 years, and I just went, okay.
Now, Jordan Powell has now brought the God. There's so many people from our. Little world into the Miranda Lambert arena.
Oh, man.
Aiden Brubeck, of course, bass player from Max Stalling that we all knew here in Fort Worth.
Alex
Whedon. The podcast's own electric Alex Whedon.
Yeah.
Boy, got some emails on that from Whedon.
our front of house
Miranda's
guy.
Guitar player, my old camp buddy, Whedon, playing with Miranda.
Our front
who
of house.
Who got engaged on stage the other night.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, my gosh. Can I see that on YouTube somewhere?
You can.
Thanks to you, Johnson.
No, I did not videotape it. But I'm almost positive that Alex has it on his Facebook.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah.
Here I am getting engaged. Check it out.
I think it's more you wanted people to see his guitar solo.
That's right.
Right.
It's 3 minutes of his guitar solo, then he gets engaged at the end.
Right.
It starts to fade right there.
Starts to fade out.
Right.
Black.
Now, is Miranda, is she and Blake married, getting married?
In May. They'll be
Blake Shelton,
May.
Country mm-hmm. artist, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting married in May. Did you get invited, Jordan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be there. No official role.
As a guest, are you going to be crawling around on the altar, plugging in wires and making sure the...
just a guest. I will show up and
you want
and
Bud
look
Light
pretty.
Backstage?
It's funny. Some of the band guys and crew guys will come up and start asking questions about the wedding. Like, hey, are we doing this, that? And Jordan's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a guest.
I'm just going to show up.
Just show up and hang out.
Where are they? They get married in Nashville?
No, they're going to get married in Texas. Honestly, I don't even know where it is. It's down in South Texas somewhere.
Okay. Good deal. They need a band to play?
Because Bill
Pritchett and the full band will show up and kick some ass.
Man,
no
I
question.
Know that they would. Maybe
we've done some weddings. And if they're cool, maybe they can get up and sing a song with us.
We did a great wedding together in the Woodlands. Do you remember that one?
Where our band?
Yeah, you remember we did me, you, Lynch, and Stolly did a wedding at the Woodlands, at the Woodlands Country Club. And all I remember from that is we were in a little holding room. And they said, hey, we got you guys some dinner. They brought us this plate with just prime rib mashed potatoes. Just looked amazing.
Yeah.
And they locked us back in this room with no silverware.
All right.
So I remember having to pick up my prime rib and eat it. Just this bleeding piece of meat. And I'm gnawing on it. Lynch is just sitting there with his head in his hands going, I can't believe you're doing this.
Yeah, just like,
we're at the Woodlands Country. You're eating prime rib with your hands.
He's like, I'm hungry, man. Was that when we played shuffleboard on the table?
Yes.
With the bottle caps?
With the bottle caps.
That's how we entertained ourselves, like 3 hours.
Yeah.
They obviously didn't want us walking around the grounds.
They
said, you guys will come on in a couple hours. Like, okay, what? So we were just sitting there doing nothing. We had these little bottle caps and this long, long, like, conference table. And we just started playing shuffleboard.
Yeah.
And you'd think it'd be, like, just maybe a level down in seriousness or competition, maybe, than a real
not
shuffleboard.
Not with Jason Stolle.
No.
Not at all.
No.
Equally as competitive.
Yes.
Equals trash talking.
And I'm guessing they were Bud Light bottle caps.
Bud Light bottle caps.
Right.
They would just slide like this wax table. That was better than any shuffleboard. We had the bottle caps, just slide it down.
No, that's mine's hanging on.
That's a hanger. So you guys ready to play? We're like, yeah.
We're going to knock this out real quick.
Well, gosh. Well, I get a tech. We talked about this the other day. Touched on it a little bit, and I want to talk more on it next week. We're going to start a little tease here. Miranda was recently. I get a text from Jordan Powell. I go eat some barbecue the other day with the family. I get this text, just in the studio with Don Henley, man. I'm just like, what? And I go, man. And so Miranda is singing on Don Henley's new record, or she at least did some singing for it.
Right.
Is there any guarantee it'd make the final cut?
We'll see what happens.
Who knows?
We'll see what happens, but. Yeah.
But the other part, as if that isn't a cool enough thing, Powell gets to go to the studio. Were we all in Nashville?
Sound Emporium.
Sound Emporium, okay. Mm-hmm. Big studio, great studio there. And on the production board, producing the sessions, none other than Stan Lynch, drummer for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers for all those years.
Producer extraordinaire, produced the Wallflowers. Produced a lot of that early Henley stuff, Last Worthless Evening.
I didn't know he did all that production back then. Yep. So Henley kind of trusts him. They've worked together in the past.
Yep.
So what is old Stan Lynch like? He seemed like he'd be a
cool
guy.
I was a little worried because I've read, a lot of the Petty biographies. Oh. You watch that movie.
Well, Lynch and Petty kind of had a falling out at some point. Tensions were frayed by the time he left the band.
Yeah, mid-90s, he was just,
kind of
burned out.
Yeah.
Petty was going a different direction. Uh-huh. Stan Lynch had kind of, one gear. He just wanted to just beat the drums and play his tail off.
Right.
And he was great at it.
Sure.
But, I guess as that came about, he just didn't want to be out there anymore. After 20 years on the road, he was ready to do something else.
It's just hard to imagine that guy in that, you got lucky, babe, getting out of that DeLorean.
The motorcycle thing. Yeah.
That's what I think of Stan Lynch, Getting out of the You Got Lucky video, sitting there with Powell at the board.
Walked in, and I was really...
You hadn't met him before the sessions?
I had never met Sam. I'd met Henley 3 times.
Really? How did that come up? Well, we'll talk about that later. Let's go back to Lynch.
So, walk in, there he sits, and, he'd aged a little bit, but still good shape, looked good. And I was real nervous, man. I was like, God, this is... Stan Lynch.
Surreal.
I hope he's not a jerk. Walked in, stuck his hand out. Miranda was talking to Don. We were getting everything ready for her to sing. Lynch just pulls a chair.
Don's in the corner.
Lynch just pulls a chair up next to him. Goes, here, man, sit down. Man, y'all have had a great year. So, man, we just start talking. Like we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Man, for 4 years, we didn't get any radio play. We were just out playing.
Right.
Man, tell me about it. The 70s with Petty.
Yeah.
He said, man, it just, you beat your head against a wall, and finally the wall falls down.
That's right.
We shared a couple moments about that and talked music, what he'd been doing. And
Does he live in Nashville,
yeah,
L.A.?
Yeah, I think he's in Florida.
He
moved back to Florida several years ago. So
cool deal, man.
But, yeah, really, really cool, and just it could not have gone better.
Yeah.
I walked away just going, man, because there's so many times you hear about people meeting – a hero or meeting somebody that they've always admired, right, and that person's a jerk to them, mm-hmm, you know, and it just ruins the whole experience.
That's right, man.
So,
like the first time I met Buddy Huffman.
Yes.
Just kidding, buddy. Making Grayson Frontman great, the podcast zone. Well, man, that's good stuff, man. Good stuff. I want to hear more about the Don Henley sessions, et cetera, when we get into our next segment here. Hopefully, Troy and Jordan can be back here with us next week to talk a little more about, man, what the future holds for these guys out on the road with Miranda, et cetera. Maybe we'll hear a little bit more about Don Henley in the studio. A little difficult Henley. That's his reputation anyway.
Surly, maybe
kind of a know-it-all. I'll see those interviews with Henley sometimes, and he seems so smug. So, you know, like, he never shrugs his shoulders and goes, "Yeah, man, the '70s are fun." He'll just stare into the camera and go, "You know, the Eagles' greatest hit sold 25 million records." And he'll just like stare at the camera, like, "Let that sink in for a minute." You know, I'm kind of like, "Golly," he seems like kind of a humorless type dude, somewhat.
Yeah, well, somewhat, you know, humorless. It's funny.
He's an artist, you know.
He just randomly appears and has three different times in my life. You know, it's like, man, is he like a creative muse? Or
he lives in Dallas, right? Does he live in Dallas full time?
I mean, so the day that I actually got hired by Miranda, mm-hmm, went to Rafa's and was sitting at Rafa's.
Mexican food on Lover's Lane in Dallas?
I just thinking, man, I mean, this is a big gig. I just got hired by Miranda. She's got, you know, new record out.
People,
man,
and buses.
Getting ready to go.
Real
deal. I'm like, man, my life is really changing here. And as I'm sitting there thinking that and saying that out loud, Don Henley walks into the door at Rafa's and sits down at the table next to me. I'm like,
on a dark desert highway.
Man, this is just a whole new ball game.
Yeah, right. This is a whole new world is opening up for Jordan Powell.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jordan and Troy Johnson. I want to talk a little more about the Don Henley stuff, but also want to go back into the memory here. It's always amusing for me, Phil, to remember some things and then see if y'all remember it the same way. Talk about the old days a little bit, how you guys got into what we're doing over the years, and we appreciate y'all coming in. We'll see y'all next week. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Coming up, we're going to walk over here to the vault, put our hands on a record, and see what we got in the vault next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Thrilled to have you with us. Oh, man, how about that backstage look at the Grammys there from Troy Johnson and Jordan Powell, my old road crew. Now with Miranda Lambert playing Billy Bob's tonight over there. Oh, outstanding, outstanding. Fun stuff there. It makes it all the more funnier when you know Troy and Jordan like I do, and just how much they love putting on their laminates and talking on their phone and having a little CB thing on their shirt. They love it, man. They eat it up. Hey, that's what we all love in the business. Great for having those guys coming in. They got more stories to tell. We're going to talk more, I think, next week with these guys, talking about Jordan kind of got into a recording with Don Henley. You know, with Miranda, Don Henley's new record, Stan Lynch from the Heartbreakers producing that record. Oh, man, I want to hear more. I want to hear more. So we'll also talk about Jordan's three visits from Don Henley before he actually recorded with Don Henley. You know, kind of like the Charles Dickens A Christmas Carol. The three visits of Don Henley. So we'll talk about more of that. Don Henley and the three visits to Jordan Powell next week. What do you have for us in the vault, Data Phil? Oh, man, Sting. We don't hear about Sting a whole lot these days. Am I right or am I wrong? He reunited with the Police. Man, he kind of gets a funny name these days. You know, the tantric sex thing and the, oh, just all the yoga and floating around and whatever. But, dude, Sting is a great musician. And if you grew up in the 80s like me, man, you couldn't avoid the greatness of Sting. And then, man, kind of in the late 80s, after he left the Police, broke up the Police in the mid-80s, he made some jazz albums, things like Dream of the Blue Turtles and Nothing Like the Sun. Very jazzy, very, very strange. But some great stuff on there, man, and really different than kind of what you were hearing other just pop rock stars doing at the time. Very eccentric, could play any kind of instrument. If you went to a Sting show, he'd always give you some great version of an old song. I've seen him play three or four times over the years, and man, never disappoints in live. I don't know, I haven't kept up with him in recent years, but man, well into his solo career, all the way up near 2000 or so, man, his new stuff was always really strong. So he'd always be playing his new album and stuff, but I always had his new record. I followed him through Mercury Falling and other records, and this record we're going to look at today is Ten Summoner's Tales. This came out in the early 90s, I don't know. I hadn't kept up with Sting a whole lot when this record came out. I think I was in college or just out of college, but fell in love with a lot of the songs on this record. It became the theme of, I was up there, I was a counselor at the camp up there in Colorado, fly fishing, trying to figure out what my next move in life was. And who was there just singing in an operatic, somewhat pretentious and thoughtful style? Sting! Oh, man. And you're out on a date or something like that. You throw on some Sting. You go out and have a picnic in a field. I'm telling you, guys, quit trying to play Ragweed and Reckless Kelly on those types of nights. Listen to Phil. He's right. He's been married for 15 years. But great stuff, man. Sting, artistry, rock and roll, romance when you need it, all tied into one. Certainly in this song here, I know it's a little soft here for the podcast and an old rocker like myself. But love this song, man. What a beautiful melody. Fields of Gold, Sting.
Remember me when until the sun in his jealous sky, when we walked in fields of gold, when we walked in fields of gold, when we walked in fields of gold.
Oh, had to do it. Just had to do it. Remember going into town for my laundry night or my night off with that CD in the car. Listening to that song in the Colorado night, just driving back to the cabin, you know, after eating some enchiladas. Alone in the car, just heading back into camp, just thinking, man, the world is whatever I make it from here on. That's right, that's what I think of when I hear that song. Fields of Gold, what a beautiful song, Sting, laying in that field of grass, looking up at the clouds passing overhead or whatever he's doing. We support him here on the podcast. Oh, man, we've only done like one Police record on this. We did Synchronicity, I believe, a long time ago. But that early Police stuff is great, man. Punky, just nasty and gnarly, funny, dirty at times. Outstanding stuff. You know, the Sting, this kind of jazzier pop stuff was a little bit of a departure from his the Police stuff. You know, the early stuff we all came accustomed to listening to. Gosh, man, as the years go by, you look back at the Police, it's just, man, maybe one of the greatest bands ever. Really, really high up there. They're kind of overlooked as people talk about the Beatles and the Stones and U2 or whatever in the history of time. But you don't get too far down that list, man, before the Police show up, at least on any list that I have. I love this next song. This is kind of buried deep on the record, but kind of a fun card playing. We play a lot of cards in the band. Card playing song. That's Not the Shape of My Heart. Great guitar work on this. Check it out, Sting.
As a meditation, and those he plays never suspect. He doesn't play for the money he wins, he doesn't play for respect. He deals a card to find the answer, the sacred geometry of chance, law of a probable outcome, the numbers lead a dance. I know that the spades are the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. I know that diamonds mean money for this art. That's not the shape of my heart. He may play the jack of diamonds, he may lay the queen of spades, he may conceal a king in his hand while the memory of it fades. The spades are the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. I know that diamonds mean money for this art. But that's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape. Thank you.
And if I told her that I loved you, you'd maybe think there's something wrong. I met a man with too many faces. The mask I wear is one. For those who speak no nothing, like those who curse their luck in too many places, or those who fear a loss. I know that the spades are the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. I know that diamonds mean money for this art. That's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape of my heart.
Love that one, man. Mournful, witty, sad, melodic, all the things. If somebody walked into my studio today with a nylon string guitar and sat down and played that song, you know, just some album cut that Sting's got, if someone walked in there today and said, I wrote this song, I play a lot of cards, here it is, I just fall on the ground. I fall on the ground and start crying. That's what I do. Bring it to me. Remember that guy back in segment one, the cook painting dessert? Painting dessert on the canvas? Paint the dessert. Come record here at Trinidad World Recording Studios. If you really want to be on all these Texas music stations and you want to sound like everybody else, go somewhere else. If you want to reinvent everything you are and everything your fans or anyone else is going to hear and push the boundaries, push the envelope, call me, Phil, 817-733-5256. I aspire to it. I long for it. I welcome it. Or send me an email, phil@philpritchard.com. Well, don't forget to download all those Phil Pritchard albums at p2tunes.com for $4 a piece. They're all sitting there waiting for you. Or go hit iTunes. They're all up there. Go back and listen to old archived podcast catalogs, as they are all listed there on p2podcast.com. Check it out. Send me an email. Let me know how we're doing here on the podcast as we come into our 100th episode. Goodness gracious, what have we been doing? 100 episodes. Unreal. Well, that's all the time we have here today, folks. Thank you to Jordan Powell and Troy Johnson from Miranda Lambert's band, my old road crew, for stopping in for some Grammy talk. We hope to see you all on the road out there very, very soon, folks. Much tougher.
The same father but different mothers. We keep together like a family should, roaming the country for the common good. It came to pass one fateful day, we found ourselves down Mexico Way. The town, the mayor, the PTA, pleading on their knees with us all to stay. We only stopped for a few burritos, they told us of the trouble with Los Banditos. A poor little town in need of aid, but brothers and me have never been afraid. Age of chivalry, it's not dead. Lonesome nights in a cowboy band. To be a bride for every man who chased away the evil gang. For love is stronger than just this. Love is thicker than blood. Love, love, love is stronger than just this. Love is a
face was glum. The maidens numbered only one. There were seven brides for seven brothers. I knew I had to get rid of the others. Seven. The other six are singing in there.